You ready?
Yeah.
You ready? All right, hold on. Here we go.
Welcome to the My Aggie Nation podcast. On this week's episode, it's all media days, all the time. First, SEC media days that happened last week. We'll recap and revisit everything that happened on that trip and tons of A&M related things coming out of Big 12 media days up in Frisco at the Star yesterday. So we'll delve deep dive into the old conference mates and see what's going on there, including possibly reviving that Texas A&M game. I'm Travis Brown. I'm going to bring in that guy over here across the table who is my brother in peeled arms. President Zachary Taylor.
Mine's getting a lot better, though. It's not nearly as bad as it was.
I think I'm officially done. So, well,
I've still got a few remnants here. A
couple weeks ago, me and Zach, because we're buddies, we're hombres. We hung out on the 4th of July. We did a little pool party.
With some bad hombres.
Yeah, that.
Some bad hombres.
We did a little pool party during the 4th of July, and, you know, as bros do, we did not put on enough sunscreen. And, yeah, we were pretty sunburned.
Well, my excuse is a lot better than yours. You weren't drinking. Well, I was drinking. I kind of lose track of time. And
well, I just didn't want to get out of the pool.
Lotion, yeah.
So, you know, like, I'm sitting there in the hotel room in Hoover, Alabama, and you fall asleep, and basically the next day I kind of roll over and look over, and there's basically, like, a whole nother one of me, like a snake skin.
Ew, that's disgusting.
No, I bet
Cease was mad since y'all were sharing a bed, weren't y'all?
Yeah, we were spooning.
Well, oh, Lord.
You know, it was made for a nice buffer between me and Cease.
Can't even
but
imagine.
Yeah, I peeled basically the entire trip in Birmingham, and I think that from what I saw on the social medias, you were right there with me.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. I'm finally starting to get back around to my normal self. But the thing I hate about it is you go out, you get tanned, you're nice and brown. And then when you start, well, red in this case, but then you start peeling, all that brownness kind of gives way to some bright pink.
My face is a whole different shade than it was.
You're pretty dang white in your face.
Yeah, my arms tan pretty well, though, but not my face.
Well, if we need another pool day before the summer is out, hopefully can regain some tanness and don't have to worry about burning too badly if we apply the right amount of sunscreen.
Yeah, well, as I mentioned, I was in a hotel room in Birmingham, Alabama, Hoover, Alabama. With Robert Cessna and won Brent's ornament as well.
Uncle Brent got to hang out with you guys.
We were all bunking up.
That's cute.
Those 4 days. But we were there for SEC Media Days. We're going to just jump right on into it because we have so much stuff here this week. And, you know, SEC Media Days is a whirlwind. It's kind of pointless. But, I mean, you know, we get some decent stuff. A&M Day was big Wednesday. They went the same day as Alabama. And the biggest buzz surrounding A&M on A&M's day, again, that was Wednesday, was Kevin Sumlin, hot seat this season. What's going to happen? You know, how do you respond to those comments that Scott Woodward made? I'll go ahead and say on the Paul Feinbaum show, but he actually made those to Robert Cessna and I for the Eagle at MyAggieNation.com a couple months earlier. We had a big video. He said basically the same stuff. We'll go ahead and play. Before they do the little car wash, their little circuit of all the media, they talked to the local media kind of up in one of the suites, and we got to pitch that question to him first. It was the aforementioned Brent Zornman of the Houston Chronicle who threw that question out there, so you'll hear his voice first on this. But here is the best answer, I think, that Kevin Sumlin gave to how do you respond to good old Athletic Director Scott Woodward.
This offseason, he said,
what did he say?
He said, you have to win now, I think was the quote. And I know you know what he said. So.
Yeah. I just wanted to make sure that was, there's a lot of things he said. I've done this a long time, Brent, you know that. So, in almost 30 years. And for me, how I approach my job, whether it's anything that's written or anything that's said, it can change. There's nobody that puts any more pressure on me than Kevin Sumlin. And we all want the same thing. And I came here to do a job and to win a championship. And we haven't done that yet. Now, that being said, you know, we've won more games than anybody in the last 20 years. Is the place better? Are we better at Texas A&M now than when I got here? You bet. Is it where we want to be? No. And nobody wants to win more than me. I think sometimes when you look out and people try to divide people, fans, alumni, boosters, coaches, whatever, that's not the case. I know that the staff works very, very hard at it. We've got a lot of players that work very hard at it. And, you know, there are a lot of things that I think, Olin, you asked me after the last game, what do you tell frustrated fans? I said, tell them I'm frustrated too. And you know, my job's to fix it. And it's not about talking about it. It's not about, you know, the biggest sign in our building says no excuses. And it's our job to get it fixed. And that's what we're doing.
Why would you think this year's going to be better, Kevin, better than 8-5 than
because
last
I'm the coach.
Because the coach.
I'm inside of it. And if I didn't think that, I wouldn't be the coach.
But what indicators out there?
I tell you this, that in my eyes, there's a lot of energy with 29 new guys. I think the way they've been embraced by the guys that are here hadn't always been the case.
No excuses. Play like a champion.
Nobody wants to win more than Kevin Sumlin. I'm not going to disagree with him on that. I think, obviously, Kevin Sumlin wants to win. He wants to win so he can keep his job. He wants to win so he can better his legacy at Texas A&M. And, of course, he wants to win. I'm really... We'll see how this works out.
You were tuned in to most of Media Days, at least the TV coverage, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I was paying attention to it.
When we're involved and talking to everybody and doing all that fun stuff, it's hard to get kind of a big picture perspective from what you saw on TV and what you were following on Twitter and stuff. How do you think Sumlin handled the whole situation and just kind of came across during Media Day?
He's definitely softened his touch quite a bit. I think anybody who has either followed him or worked a beat around Kevin Sumlin for a while now, you know, because my first year here was his first year. So we've grown old together, so to speak.
Just rocking chairs on a front porch.
Pretty much. Me and Sumi are our bestie buds. I'm hanging out in Indian Lakes on his $3 million pad or whatever. And we're chilling out on the front stoop with some lemonade and enjoying the cool breeze coming in. But yeah, he's softened his touch quite a bit. And I would say that's not just with the local media. That's all the way around. I think that's a better way to market himself as being a more likable person. And right now, you know, it's kind of one of those deals. Nick Saban can be as big of a jerk as he wants to be because he's Nick Saban. Nick Saban can come across however Nick Saban wants to, a guy who, you know, has what it comes off as a personality of a dead fish. And just sits up there, you know, we're just happy to be here. I mean, Bill Belichick style with better hair. But Kevin Sumlin, you know, he doesn't have that luxury because right now is very much in the hot seat and he hadn't been winning the way.
Well, he even took a pause to grant good old Arkansas beat reporter Bob Holt a question and apologized for cutting him off like 5 years ago, saying that he's a newer, kinder Kevin Sumlin.
Newer, kinder Summy?
Yeah. So
we'll see how that plays out if I ask him any questions.
He definitely turned it on when he got down amongst the masses and was a little bit more of his normal swaggy self. But yeah, he seemed a little bit beat down.
Well, he definitely seemed beat down after the Texas Bowl game. I mean, literally and figuratively, because, well, they didn't really necessarily incur a beat down. It was a pretty bad loss. But, yeah, you know, he's tired of it. He's tired of the same old shtick. He's tired of the same old questions, you know. And we'll be coming at him again this year. If A&M starts 5-0, Coach, what's different this year than last year? What makes you think that this team isn't going to have
5-0?
Yeah, well, what makes you think this is going to be a better second half of play than it has in previous years? You know, and you look at his worst start here at Texas A&M, that was in his first year. He lost the first game. That was to Florida. So over Kevin Sumlin's career, I can tell you what, one thing it was, he had set the bar so high through his first season. And what really added to, if the college football playoff was around, I think A&M would have been in it that year. and I think they would have had a real shot to win it.
Yeah.
You could, I mean, you can disagree with me on that if you want to, but coming off a victory over Alabama and rolling into the postseason with that much momentum, having the Heisman Trophy winner, I think A&M would have been in the college football playoff, and, you know, they beat the national champion who just completely obliterated Notre Dame that year. But that's another thing for a different time or another argument. But he set the bar so high, there's basically nowhere to go but down. And I think people were okay with that for a couple of years. But when you repeatedly have this 8-5 finishes and just completely hitting the floor in the month of November, folks are going to grow tired of that. Now, I'm not going to put an exact win on Kevin Sumlin this year because I don't know if it necessarily is that. You know, I think if he was to finish the regular season at 7-5 and beat LSU or Alabama, then I think his job will probably be safe and include
7-5?
I think so.
No chance.
You don't think so?
I think yes. I think he has to win at least 9 games.
And that's not going to happen.
Beat LSU or Alabama, if not 10.
And that's not going to happen.
Because I think that there was enough people wanting his head last season that he really has to impress. Yeah, you're right. That isn't going
to
happen.
You have to look over your options as well. And I think a lot of this came into play last year because a lot of people were mad. A lot of people, I'm sure folks who are big movers and changers at Texas A&M were wanting Kevin Sumlin gone, but you have to ask yourself, who are you going to get? Who are you going to go out there and get?
Lee Fedora.
Chad
Morris.
Lee Fedora is happy over at A&M Consolidated now. He's got a brand new job. Or Larry. Larry Fedora. You know.
Which is Sumlin 2.0.
In some ways, yeah. He's got about the exact same record.
Right. And
granted, he's at UNC, and I wouldn't argue that UNC has the same kind of recruits and talent.
If no one emerges this year, if someone wins 7 games or less, he's out. I think that they just can't afford to keep him around.
I
think, unless someone emerges, it's going to be Chad Morris.
You're trying to catch that star as it's on its upward trajectory, which is very similar to what they did with Kevin Sumlin, and that does not always make a good coach.
But I totally
Chad
understand
Morris,
that.
And Chad Morris could recruit like these guys that Kevin Sumlin's losing to Alabama and LSU in the Houston area and things like that. If Chad Morris was at Texas A&M. You'd think that maybe some of those guys with the ties that he has through the high school coaches in the state, that some of those kids might end up being, you know, end up staying. But, you know, Chad Moore, he's gone through 2 years.
Here's the difference. Here's what you can sell about Chad Morris. And I'm playing devil's advocate a little bit here because I still don't think that Chad Morris in any other circuit. Chad Morris getting the A&M job is like the A&M baseball team making Omaha this year. It all just would happen to work out that right way. But here is my devil's advocate argument on if they did hire Chad Morris. He personality-wise, he is exactly opposite from Kevin Sumlin. He goes out of his way to be friendly and forthcoming, and he doesn't have that kind of smug swagger that
he's
Kevin
a good
Sumlin,
old boy. He's a good old boy from old boy. Texas. Texas.
And I think that you could sell because he has a lot of energy too. I think he would be very active in going to all the booster clubs and signing autographs and kissing babies and giving.
You don't think Kevin Sumlin likes walking the red carpet?
He likes walking the red carpet at an arm's length from everybody so everyone can take a picture and then, you know, walking away and not really shaking hands or kissing babies or doing any of that stuff. I think Chad Morris would not be on the red carpet. Chad Morris would go under the velvet rope and be giving people hugs and, you know, kissing babies.
I agree that Chad Morris is not, well, he's not bristly at all, and Sumlin can be bristly at times. And, you know, when you're looking at least in the high school football landscape, you know, you like the old slap on your back type coach. But ultimately what it comes down to is wins. Does Chad Morris, I mean, he's an Aggie. So that in and of itself, you automatically say, oh, well, he understands the culture. He gets it because he graduated from here. But I don't see him. I don't know, man. If he goes 7-5 at SMU this season and Sumlin goes 8-5 or less, then you think that's going to be an automatic trade?
A trade, yeah.
I mean, I don't know what else you would call that because you're swap. I mean, something not like Sumlin's going to go to SMU, but
how fun would it be if Sumlin and Kingsbury ended up at SMU
and just completely annihilated the yeah. conference, whatever that is?
Yeah. I'm just saying
you got to look over your options. What else do you have?
That's the point.
Chip Kelly's not going to be slapping backs and kissing babies.
Chip Kelly's system isn't going to work in the SEC.
Well,
and Les Miles isn't going to come to A&M.
No.
So, I mean, well, Mac Brown?
No.
I mean, that's...
No, Mac would...
I know.
Mac is in a pretty cushy spot
Devil's advocate again. He said he wouldn't mind returning to coaching if it was the right spot.
This ain't the right spot for Mac Brown. He's not going to be coming here. Mike Leach.
I mean, really. Chat, if you think about all those people and you really think, unless they really just want to go to some upstart coordinator that we just aren't thinking about right now. Doug Meacham doesn't like A&M. There's no telling what he was probably the hottest coordinator on the market, but got it. Crossways with Patterson, and now is at Kansas. So yeah. We'll see how that goes.
Kansas might be on the up and up, man.
Kansas wins 9-10 games, you get David Beatty in here.
That's not going to happen.
No,
that would never happen.
No, but that's my point. I mean, if you look at the landscape and look who actually would come here, you're not going to lure Jimbo Fisher away from Florida State.
No.
To come to A&M. So, Chad Morris really is looking like he's one of the only guys in that group that actually wants this job.
Yeah. I mean, you could
and
look at him.
There is something to that.
Phil Montgomery at Tulsa, I think, is an up-and-coming coach.
Sure.
He's a younger guy.
Yeah.
Of course, he's from that Baylor tree, the Art Briles tree. But, I mean, he knows the state, mm-hmm. obviously, and he's a younger guy, and he's got Tulsa playing pretty well. Yeah, I don't think A&M and Aggies would love to kind of puff their chest and say, oh, we can bring any coach we want to
How
here.
How fun would it
That's
be to
not
get Mac
happen.
Brown in here?
No.
How fun would that be?
Mac is definitely the good elk, but he's not going
to
be coming.
If you wanted to talk about fun, cool little storylines, though, if Chad Morris is the guy, Chad Morris and Tom Herman really don't like each other that much.
And Chad Morris has beat Tom Herman.
It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun to think about.
No, I'm not saying that it's not, but so we're talking about this as if Sumlin's already gone, as if he's out the door, as if this is his last year. And
you're giving him a lot more leeway than I am.
Yeah, I know. I will admit that everything looks that way. But I think when fans look at these records over the past years and they say it's 8-5, it's not necessarily the actual final record that bothers them. It's the collapse. The high hopes and then the collapse at the end. If someone were to say, you know, let's take a look at the Aggie schedule real quick because I had it pulled up. They play at UCLA. So let's say they lose to UCLA.
Are we going to go game by game?
No,
here?
We don't have to go game by game. I'm just talking about early on. I said if they don't go 5-0, and you said, well, they're not going to go 5-0. So UCLA, that's a loss. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah.
Nicholls State, that's a win. Louisiana Lafayette, that's a win. Against Arkansas.
Man, I don't know.
Every year, A&M has Arkansas's number.
That's a push for
A&M. A&M is to Arkansas as LSU is to A&M for some weird reason. I don't know why. So let's say they beat Arkansas. Then they've got South Carolina at home.
They'll beat South Carolina.
So, you know, they very easily could be 4-1. Heading into the game against Bama,
but that's a horse crap 4-1 because two of the games are Nicholls State and Louisiana Lafayette.
All right, so you got Bama, then you got at Florida.
So really, just take those two out of it because that's not even like you're playing. You know,
so the final record shouldn't count. It should only count in SEC.
Well, games that actually, I mean. No, not the final record, but if you're going to say like, oh, well, they busted out to a 4-1 start. No, really, they busted out to a 1-1 start. Because you got to win those.
I understand what you're saying, and I wish that Power 5 teams would play other Power 5 teams in non-conference, but ultimately it still counts towards your record.
Okay, and this is a whole other different argument for a different day, but my argument too is, why are you playing Nicholls State and Lafayette? Play Kansas. I think there's more to playing Kansas than there is...
Play Kansas, why not play Texas?
Well, yeah. Well, hey, you know what?
Segway!
We'll move into that next on the My Aggie Nation podcast.
Zach Taylor, Travis Brown. My Aggie Nation podcast after a week off, a week of reprieve, some R&R for me. You were busy doing stuff. Are there any other media days you're going to be going to here soon?
No, I'm glad.
You didn't go to the ACC, not going to go to the Conference USA?
I could have gone to Conference USA today.
Where's that at?
Dallas.
Is it really?
Yeah. excuse me. The American, I think, is up in like Connecticut or something.
By
like
the
that.
Way, real quick before we get to what I know we were going to talk about this segment, whenever they were talking about and Sankey was mentioning, what if we move
Greg Stanky? As, yeah, him too. Cease calls him.
If we move the SEC media days around, could you see that happening?
Yes.
Geographically, I think it makes plenty of sense because you can cover all the outer rims. You know what
I'm saying? I have no actual sourcing for this. This is all opinion. But the SEC Media Days will be at the Star next year.
Think so?
Yeah.
So they're going to be coming in on the Big 12's turf.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah. Because it makes for a much better backdrop for the SEC Network. Jerry Jones,
Arkansas is going
to pay the money. The SEC wants to encroach upon the Big 12's territory. You get the attendance was way down as far as reporters goes at media days this year. So why, I'm sure
they're talking about for SEC, not
yeah,
Big 12.
SEC. Okay. Why throw a bone to, I mean, you're going to probably gain back what you lost in Dallas, you know, top five market media coming to cover the media days just because it's in Dallas.
Yeah, local folks.
And those feeds and broadcasts and column inches are more, widely circulated than most of the small towns. I mean, there's no big cities in the SEC's footprint other than Atlanta.
Yeah.
And Dallas. And, well, yeah. But that's just on the very periphery.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, you can cover all the outer stuff geographically.
Dallas is a much bigger market than Nashville.
Right. And that's the headquarters of the college football playoff.
Yes.
So it does make a lot of sense, but what I'm saying is you can rotate. You can go to Dallas, you can go to Nashville, you can go to Jacksonville,
Florida. I'm sure it'll rotate, but I'm thinking they'll start this traveling circus at the Star, or the other option is, the Gaylord, where the, you know, the, all the college
not
football,
too shabby either.
Oh, it's a fantastic place.
Go to the, Glass Cactus.
I don't know if that actually still exists.
They got rid of it? I saw Kelly Clarkson there for the Cotton Bowl 2013.
I don't know if that still exists.
Oh, man,
but the Gaylord is fantastic.
Me and so. Kelly will always have that moment to share.
I have no sourcing on this, but if I was a betting man, I'd put a little bit of money down that it'll be in Dallas.
Talking out here.
Yep. So I was at Big 12 Media Days these past 2 days. It's always a fun affair. Lots of my old compatriots and friends and people to catch up
the
with.
The cheerleaders and the mascots, was that a little much?
No, it's actually pretty hilarious.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's a nice little reprieve.
I'd love the cheerleaders to hang
out.
It
actually, like, this year, since it was on a field, they had footballs around and stuff, and the mascots were actually playing, like running plays, and that was extremely humorous to watch. Willie the Wildcat hit Bevo on a post, and it was just...
Gorgeous.
It was pretty fun. So yeah, I like the mascots. They break things up a little bit. But of course, naturally, we'll get right into the biggest news.
Big news.
A&M related, and probably one of the bigger storylines that came out of SEC Media Days.
Big storyline.
Excuse me, Big 12 Media Days yesterday. That was the new football coach over at University of Texas, Tom Herman, saying, "We want A&M. And it wasn't, I was standing there in the huddle. It was, this was, The way Big 12 is broken up is in the mornings they have the coaches up at the podium. That's the big TV event and everything like that. And afterwards they have all the coaches and players at tables the other side of the field just for kind of what they call one-on-ones, but it's never a one-on-one usually because there's so many people there. It's breakout, you know.
Just throwing the riding press a bone.
Yeah. So I was over in the huddle and I was standing ready to, as I worked my way up to the front of the huddle, to throw out there, so what's your take on... What's your take on A&M? Where does that stand? What's your stance? But before I could get to that, Tom Herman threw it out himself. And I'll go ahead and say the reporter who asked the question, I don't know who it was just simply asking a question about what's your philosophy on non-conference scheduling. So that's how this clip plays out. Here is Tom the Herman.
Coach, what's your philosophy on non-conference scheduling? A lot of times a coach wants like a really tough one, pretty much in the middle one, and then maybe an easier game. What are those first three games? Do you have a philosophy on kind of how you want your non-conference lining up the next few years? Even though the schedules are done.
Yeah, I don't know that my philosophy, I don't know that my philosophy matters really much at this point.
Looking forward.
Yeah, I think it's really difficult because of the fact that Texas A&M left our conference. Our fans, we don't play a rival at home ever. You know, and where every other year we played A&M at home, and we play every year we play OU in Dallas. Those are probably our two biggest rivals in the history. Now, can we kind of generate and try to fabricate some new rivalries? Sure, but those are going to be the two main rivals of the University of Texas, because they are in recruiting, they are in academia, they are in a lot of things. And so I don't know why we can't play A&M as our marquee non-conference opponent. And, you know, again, that's a well above my pay grade, but, you know, Florida and Florida State find a way to play every year, and they're in different conferences. Clemson, South Carolina, Georgia Tech. I mean, the list goes on and on of rivals, in-state rivals that are in different conferences that play each other each and every year. And so I do think it's a little bit more difficult. Those are also conferences that play eight conference games, not nine. So you can schedule your other three accordingly, where we only have two to schedule accordingly. But if you're going to play a big boy such as USC, LSU, and Ohio State, I'd like to see us play, you know, the big boy right down the road from us.
Is that a question?
You are on record saying you want to play. Just be sure.
I don't believe this is off the record.
Right. Yeah, but would you initiate talks with them?
I wouldn't even know where to start, Brian. Initiate talk. Maybe what I just said right there might initiate something. I don't know, but makes a lot of sense to me.
Right.
Yeah. But I wouldn't even know. I mean, we'll worry about that in January.
Sure.
There it is. Texas A&M coming to a TV near you soon.
Hermit Crab has spoken.
Maybe.
Herman Crab? Herman?
Hey, he makes a good point. From an outside perspective, from a college football fan, having grown up in the state of Texas, he makes a fantastic point.
Now, everyone knows that they need to play. And I tell you what, the Aggie fans who tell you they don't want to play Texas are kidding themselves. They're lying to themselves, because you see all the trash talk via Twitter. You see all the trash talk via Facebook. You got houses divided. You got that one cousin who bought the T-shirt from Walmart, and he's a big Texas fan. And you actually went to the other school, and you're saying, you know what, we could kick the crap out of you if we actually played. But it never actually happens. It's just talk. It's all talk. I'm done talking. I'm ready to do something on the field and settle it.
So, funny story, good story. I went and talked to a bunch of the Texas players afterwards and said, you know, what's your take? And it's a question that's usually asked of Texas players and has been since 2012. And the ones who had played A&M before they moved over, you know, they were the ones who were kind of like, you know, whatever. It's not a big deal. Kind of staying by the party line. But as you've gotten, last year was the first senior class that had never played A&M on the football field.
Right.
And they wanted it. And then you talk this year, you have a good old PJ Locke, the defensive back, who you asked him, he said, yeah, you know, I was kind of keeping an eye on recruiting, and you have that top safety, one of the top safeties in the country, Leon O'Neal. Mm-hmm. He was a guy that was looking like he was really headed to Texas, and then recently committed to A&M. And he said, you know, we still compete. We still compete in all this recruiting stuff, and it would just be really nice to settle the score on the field. He said his quote was, we're still competing against them. We've just got to show them that Texas is the best.
And that's perfectly fine for him to say, but the problem is he can't back it up on the field until they actually play each other.
Exactly.
And we were just going over some of this schedule, and we mentioned this, you know, other than UCLA, you got Nicholls State, Louisiana Lafayette, and New Mexico in the Aggie schedule. You're playing New Mexico on November 11th in the middle of all of these SEC games, and New Mexico has been atrocious.
The example
recently.
Here, the example here, I know what you're getting at. The example here you have to follow is Florida, Florida State. They play each other every year at the end of the season.
South Carolina, Clemson.
They play each other every year. There's that rivalry week, that last week of the season.
Does North Carolina play South Carolina every year, or was that was just last year, wasn't it?
I
think that was just a different thing going
on
last year.
I know the times I have watched the game, that's usually towards the beginning of the season.
Right. They play it like the first game of the season or something like
that.
Because
South Carolina Clemson is that end of the season.
Right. But I mean,
game.
You
just shuffle it around. You move that stupid Patsy game, the New Mexico State game, that gets moved to the end of the year.
And look, at this point, the people who were the movers and shakers, both when A&M left the Big 12 and when Texas was still at the Big 12, DeLoss Dodds is gone.
And the Longhorn Network. And
Bill Byrne is gone. You know, both presidents for both schools are gone. Both head coaches from both schools are gone.
One twice over.
There's been a lot of change that has happened, and these two schools have played each other in every sport but football. I mean, don't act like the Texas A&M Texas rivalry is dead just because you're not getting on the football field. We know that's the granddaddy of them all.
Right.
But, you know, we saw it at softball.
Yes.
Not taking anything away from softball, but I mean, it's not 100.
Two seasons in a row, they end Texas's season in the NCAA tournament.
And it's not 100 plus thousand people that are out there, you know, but it was still a loud and proud, proud group of people, both from Austin and from College Station. And we saw baseball, you know, at least I didn't get to go to the game this year in Austin, but I mean, you could see Clemens, that he was pumped up about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I seemed like the crowd was as well. And then I went to the game last year when Texas came here to play A&M, and that was a fantastic crowd.
You know, I know this is the My Aggie Nation podcast, and I know I am not an A&M former student, and so I'm going to offer the unpopular opinion that I know that a bunch of people have made. So, you know, don't completely tune out on this because I'm here to cover the Aggies, but if it really doesn't matter, for all of the nearly 100 people on my story, on My Agonation, that commented that we don't need that.
Haters.
We don't need to bring that back up. Why? We don't need them anymore. They made their bid when they made the Longhorn Network. Then change the words to that War Hymn. If it doesn't matter, other than the ring, to me at least as an outsider, it seems the second most sacred part about Aggiedom
Is hating Texas.
So if you don't need them anymore, change it.
It's not going to change, and they are going to play eventually.
Yes, I know.
You seem to think that it's going to be sooner than later.
Well, just for a fun exercise here, I went in my story. The Longhorns, I looked at their future schedules. Assuming that you get they get three non-conference games in the Big 12 because of that round-robin format. SEC, I believe, gets four. I'm not mistaken there, right?
Yes.
So if you look at the schedules and you're trying to place three non-conference games with the Longhorns and four with the Aggies, the Longhorns have openings in, they have games scheduled through 2027. They already have series set up with Maryland, LSU, Ohio State, Southern California, Arkansas, Rice, Central Florida, and Southern Florida. Those extend out to 2027. They have openings in the years 2018, 2020, 2021, 2022, 24, 25, 26, and 27. A&M has games scheduled through 2025 and has openings every year between 2018 and 2025. So guess what? It's not a scheduling issue. There's openings.
At this point, where both of these programs are, even though I would say it's much less this way than it was maybe a couple of years ago when A&M had a lot of momentum, but this game would benefit Texas more. Because on the record, people know that A&M, at least under Kevin Sumlin, has experienced some success and some recruiting success. Whereas Texas, they're down in the dumps. You know, they went through the Charlie Strong era. They're ready to raise back up. Beating Texas A&M would do wonders for their recruiting. And you could say Texas is back as part of, you know, the powerhouse.
As somebody does usually every season.
As somebody will probably say after their first win.
Yeah.
But, you know, at this point in time, it benefits Texas much more than it would A&M. If A&M beats Texas and people say, well, they were supposed to. A&M has been able to get these recruiting classes. They've been much more successful than Texas over the past couple of years. So it benefits Texas much more to play A&M than A&M to play Texas. That being said, for recruiting, if A&M, if in fact you move to the SEC to stop being the little brother anymore, and as an Aggie, I can say that A&M was the little brother to Texas. Everybody in the Big 12 is a little brother to Texas besides Oklahoma, because Texas has the money, Texas are the movers and shakers. And some could say that's why the Big 12 is kind of faltering a little bit if you see it that way. But if A&M truly wants to prove that they are no longer under Texas's shadow, if they go and they massacre them, either at Kyle Field or at Darryl K. Royal, then that will put aside everything and you will begin to reap the benefits of that in recruiting. And all these guys who were coming to A&M but decided to go to Texas. You know, you got the Malik Jeffersons of the world. You got the Chris Boyds of the world. You got a lot of these guys. So it is beneficial for A&M, too. Granted, it's beneficial for the victor. For the loser, it's pretty bad. But at this point, you know, like in football, like in life, put your money where your mouth is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're going to talk trash, if you're going to say we run the state, then prove it. Beat other teams in the state. Mm-hmm. And if you're unwilling to do that, then all you are is talk.
Right. And most, other than recruiting, really and truly, most of all the talk that A&M has right now is just, oh, well, we're in the SEC. And the SEC, as a general umbrella term, is better. Not necessarily A&M is better, because the SEC is better.
It's a tougher conference.
What you're trying to say is your win against TCU or Kansas State or Texas Tech doesn't mean as much as my win over
South Carolina,
which
is bogus. I mean, if you want to take all things into consideration, you know, Kansas State proved that to be wrong. Kansas State beat Texas A&M in A&M's own backyard in Houston.
Yeah.
Granted, I mean, there were injuries, but injuries for both sides.
Sure.
And Bill Snyder came down and
Kansas State didn't even know if they really had a quarterback.
And Kansas State was a middle of the road, I'd say maybe kind of the higher end of the middle of the road, mm-hmm. but kind of a middle of the road Big 12 team.
Well, so, they were a little bit above average. We'll give Kansas.
Yeah, and
if you look at where they what
I mean,
they
returned, finished 9-4. Let's give them credit.
And what they returned this year, I mean, the media already has them as one of the top four teams projected for this season, returning a lot of the same key players.
I was looking over a lot of that stuff, by the way. Tech is going to be terrible.
Yeah.
Tech's going to be bad. As bad as they've been the past couple of years, they no longer have Pat Mahomes. They no longer have their leading receiver, who's at LSU, by the way. They are going to be atrocious.
Coach Yellow Swag was pretty checked out.
That would be Cliff Kingsbury? I think that Kingsbury, man, as much as he is loved in Lubbock by the women and the men, I think this very well might be his last year.
Yeah.
But that's an argument for a different time.
And Kevin Sumlin will reunite at SMU.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, as far as the Texas A&M rivalry, all of those people are gone now. The people who made those decisions, and what you're left with is two fan bases who want to settle the score on the field. And they want to settle these family rivalries on the field.
I don't know. A&M fan base doesn't seem to.
If people say that, they're kidding themselves.
Okay.
I'm sorry. As somebody who grew up with this game, as somebody who rooted for Texas A&M, went to Texas A&M as an Aggie who was there on that final game, I can guarantee you that people who say they don't want to beat the crap out of Texas on the football field are lying to themselves. Because they make it a big deal. You notice how whenever they get on there, they try and do everything they can to try and belittle Texas and try and make fun, poke fun, and say this thing and that thing. If it was no big deal, you wouldn't even be talking about it. You wouldn't say, oh, well, you know, Texas, they're just a bunch of jerks, bunch of stuck-up know-it-alls in Austin, da-da-da-da-da. They're so arrogant and pretentious. We're not going to mess with them. You wouldn't even say any of that. If it was Joe Schmo or Sister Mary Catherine School for the Blind, you wouldn't care if you played them or not.
Yeah.
But with this, you do care. You care whether you know it or not.
And just as a college football fan, as someone who grew up watching football in the state of Texas, I want to see this game. I want to be a part of this game. All the players want to be a part of this game. Heck, one of the players, if you go read my story on myaggynation.com, one of the players I talked to the longest about it was not one of the three players that they brought that grew up in the state of Texas. It was the punter from Sydney, Australia, whose only frame of reference about this game is that from what he's seen on film and what he's heard from teammates. And his quotes were great. I asked him what he knows about it. He said, I heard it's massive. I really want to be a part of it just to see what it's like. The A&M Texas rivalry seems like it was unmatched in college football. And it has picked up some traction and lore since it went away.
But yeah, because separation makes the heart grow fonder.
Right. So it needs to happen. It needs to happen sooner than later. And I especially think like we were talking about, I can't remember if it was on the podcast or off, but Tom Herman and Chad Morris don't like each other. And if that's the way that this whole storybook unravels, that would make it even funner. This is the My Aggie Nation podcast. Like I said, we were up at Big 12 Media Days. We have some fun other little A&M related tidbits from Big 12 Media Days. That's next. What's going on? It's My Aggie Nation podcast. Travis Brown, that guy over there, that's Zach Taylor. This past week, I was up at Big 12 Media Days, or I guess the past 2 days, I was up at Big 12 Media Days at the Star. New Jerry World, new mini Jerry World up there in Frisco.
Jerry World Jr.,
a new venue for the Big 12 Media Days. They're usually over at the Omni in downtown Dallas, but this year, first year over there.
Which is real nice, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, I like the setup, man. You know, I was saying that if I was a betting man, I have no sourcing on this, but I'm just going off rumors and interesting ideas and thinking that maybe big SEC Media Days will be hosted there next year. If that's the case, man, I liked it.
I'm all for that. Make for an easy trip for me.
Yeah, and it was just a real laid back, easy environment to do what you need to do.
Could we go have? Could we go stay at your house and build a pillow fort?
Sure.
And Mama Brown could like make us s'mores and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be awesome.
My dad makes really good little pigs in a blanket with little Smokies and Pillsbury croissant.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Ready to hang out at Casa de Brown.
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll do the My Aggie Nation podcast from the Brown abode. But Big 12 Media Days, like a few other little A&M related tidbits that happened. We'll get to some audio from former Texas A&M quarterback Kenny Hill here in a second.
Did he play at Texas A&M?
Yeah, he did.
Kenny Hill did? Okay.
Kenny Hill did. You know what? I'm gonna throw you off guard here, Zach.
Oh.
Do you have it ready?
Do I have the audio ready?
Yeah. We'll play the audio here. I'll set up. It was me and Benjamin Baby of the Dallas Morning News, just kind of shooting the breeze with Kenny Hill about some subjects. So you get a little bit on Nick Starkel because they both. Where at least at one time, I don't think together, but they both were South Lake Carroll Dragons before Nick Starkel moved on to Argyle Liberty Christian. We get a little talk about new A&M grad assistant coach.
Connor McQueen.
Connor McQueen. Why did I forget his name?
You just know him as that redheaded guy.
Yeah, that redheaded guy. And then a little bit on Kenny Hill's take on chicken fingers. I think this was probably, other than the Tom Herman audio, this is the most intriguing audio from Big 12 Media. So enjoy.
Starkle's game a little bit from what you have seen or know about him?
To be completely honest with you, I haven't seen him too much.
Yeah.
I've heard and seen he has a big arm. But really, other than that, I don't know too much about him.
Yeah.
I'll get the scoop on all that from Connor McQueen here pretty soon. I'm gonna have to ask and see what's going on out there.
What do you think about him passing up like a big money job for coaching?
Man, he's doing what he loves, and I love it. And you know, when you see him, even when he was playing, I mean, he was a coach. Like when I first got there, he was the one that really taught me the offense. Like he really, like he's like every day in the summer, he's like, all right, well, like, this is what this is. Like we'll be standing in the back and he'll explain everything to me. So I mean, he's really good. He is a coach.
So he might actually make it in this career choice.
I 100,000% believe that he'll make it in this career choice.
It seems like he knows a ton about QB play and all that. Because like anytime we need to know anything about Trevor, like Connor could break everything down.
Oh no, yeah,
Connor just that. Yeah.
No, he really he just has that. He just has that mind. He has a football mind, and he just understands the game, and he understands the offenses that he's playing in. Like he goes in and he studies it like he's about to be the starter, you know. And that's, I mean, from the fourth, fifth string walk-on quarterback, that's not something you see every day, you know. It's someone who really dives into the playbook like that and can teach anybody the entire offense. You know, that's not something you see every day. So, man, I love that kid. Though.
Right. I overheard you talking to him. I was actually about to ask about that. So, Starkle did start out in Southlake, didn't he?
Yeah.
His freshman year, right?
I don't know how long it was in high school. I just know he's from Southlake, and I've known him through Southlake. I don't remember when he actually went to Liberty. That's it.
I mean, it's actually interesting. Like, a lot of people from Southlake that went to Liberty.
Right.
Like, yeah, there's a lot of Southlake kids that went to Liberty. I don't know, just opportunity to play, I guess. You might not get recruited if you're just chilling, I guess, but I don't know. I didn't ever really think anything of it. Like we had.
I was just curious.
Yeah, I guess that would have been Agnew that played.
Yeah.
I was just curious.
Mm-hmm.
Still think that Canes is better than Lanes. I know I asked you that one.
Always ask about
your
fingers.
We had this conversation when he first got to TCU.
Yeah, I'm a big Canes guy. Don't get me wrong. Nothing wrong with Lanes. It's a little cheaper over at Lanes, but Canes is it.
Canes satisfies every time.
Well, what makes Canes better than Lanes?
I'm gonna
see, this is gonna be bad. I don't know. I like the Canes sauce a little better than the Lanes sauce. And then there's something about. And I haven't had Lanes in a while, but from what I remember, I feel like the chicken at Canes is like just juicier than it is at Lanes. I might be tripping on that, but from what I can remember in my head, Canes, the chicken, I like the chicken a little bit better.
You ready for people to come at you on that?
Oh, event? They're about to get on me bad. I already know, but that's just my preference. I mean, don't get me wrong. I went to Lanes a lot, but I just personally like Canes a little more than Lanes.
Hey, Zaxby's up in Fort Worth. Are you familiar with that?
I know about Zaxby's. We got one in it's in Keller, and we used to go over there. We used to go over Zaxby's.
No, I'm firmly in the Canes versus Lanes. I catch a lot of heat because I think Lanes is garbage.
Okay, see, I'm not gonna go that far. I do like Canes.
Well, we got a real hot take from
Ben
Baby there.
Saying Lanes is
firing
garbage.
Shots. Firing
Talk about Zaxby's. We got a Zaxby's
shots.
Here.
I love Zaxby's.
Zaxby's is good, but man, Lanes is garbage.
I think I like Zaxby's better than Lanes.
Ben Baby going to have to eat his words, man.
Slim
he done stepped in it.
Slim Chickens is where it's about. That's what I had for dinner last night.
They have
night
one of those Dallas. Places in Tyler,
oh,
by the way.
It is fantastic. Anyway, that's all a whole big grab bag of things from Kenny Trillhill, who, by the way, I covered him all through high school. I covered him a little bit after his time at A&M. I'll just go ahead and brush my shoulders off and say I broke the story about him transferring from A&M to TCU.
Oh, you are good.
I did break that story. He happened to sit next to me at a South Lake Carroll baseball game I was covering. So, you know, literally fell.
Hey, man, where
are
you going?
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly how it happened. But the he's a very much a changed guy. I mean, he was joking around, he was having fun. He seemed very much, you know, he talks about growing up. He does seem much more like an adult. He does not shy away from questions about A&M and his time there and how he's grown up, and doesn't seem, he was a guy beforehand that if you asked him something he didn't really want to talk about, he wasn't going to talk about it. And there was just a overwhelming sense of, you know, comfort and maturity that wasn't there. So I don't know if that's going to translate to the football field. If you have my hot take on it, I don't necessarily think it will, but he seems like he's just in a better place. I mean, you ask him, how have you grown up? You say, keep saying you've grown up. How have you grown up? And he said, listen, beforehand, if you said it's Saturday night, what are we doing? I'm going to, if I was me before, we're going to a party, you know, yeah, all this stuff. Me now going out is going to consist of just me going to a movie. Then I'm going to come home on Saturday night and relax and rest and then go to church on Sunday morning with my family, because that's what I do now.
Better be going to church.
So it wasn't like he was, you certainly didn't get the idea that he was just giving you a line or something like that. I mean, it seems like that's really how he lives his life, and, you know, more power to him.
No, I mean, that's great. I think even a lot of Aggie fans, despite kind of some sore feelings about Kenny Hill and his departure and things like that, you always like to hear if a guy has kind of turned himself around, if he was struggling with, you know, addiction or his inner demons or whatever it might have been, to hear him talk about, you know, helping to turn his life around. That's always a good
thing. And there's that Andy Staples story that came out too. And, you know, he was talking about in there that he fully realizes that when you Google image search Kenny Hill, if not the first two, in the top 10 pictures is going to be one of his mugshot and one of him passed out in a planer on Northgate. And he hates that. As you're doing that right now.
I don't know if I've ever actually seen that picture of him passed out in a planer.
But, you know, they all say it's outside of Chimmy's, but I found it the other day, and it definitely looks like one
of those
planners.
The scene of the crime? Here we go.
Outside the Northgate.
Oh, yeah. He's waiting for carpool.
Yeah. So
he's not the first one to pass out there,
no,
by the way, just letting
no.
you know.
So anyway, yeah, you know, hats off to Kenny Hill. He seems to really have kind of gotten it. And I have a story up on him on MyAggieNation.com on my conversations that I had with him. Another thing that we talked about with him is now you're 3 years removed from leaving A&M. There's also two other guys, one that was there while you were there, another that followed right after you, who have also left A&M. And now this is the first season that everyone has been eligible to play football. That is Kyle Allen and Kyler Murray. Now, Kyle Allen, you know, he says he keeps in touch with him. If he's ever down in Houston, he'll go hang out with him a little bit. And you know, they were both at A&M together. He actually took over for Kenny Hill after he got benched 6 games into the season in 2014. But the other guy, the guy that has more relevance to Big 12 media days, is Kyler Murray, who is now in his first year of being eligible to play for the Oklahoma football team. And I went over there and talked to, they have a new head coach over there at Oklahoma because Big Game Bob retired, and that's Lincoln Riley. And I went over and asked Lincoln about Kyler, and Lincoln, his quote was that him and his offensive coaches will certainly keep an open mind about ways to utilize him in the offense, because he is that much of a standout talent. But make no mistake about it, he's going to be a quarterback for the Sooners. You know, they're not looking for any kind of position changes. But hey, if they can find a way, if they can find a wrinkle or a play or a package to get him out on the field, that's something that they said they'll keep an open mind about. So there could be the option or the sense that, or the opportunity that Kyler Murray will be out on the field for the Sooners this year. The other interesting thing that came about that is the thing that Lincoln Riley brought up is how well Kyler handled that transfer year, because he said that can be, especially for a guy who was a starting quarterback for a major college, having to be the scout, go back and be a scout team quarterback for a season can be just about one of the worst experiences that you could have as in relation to college athletics. And he said, probably one of the reasons why he did handle it so well is that guy that's in front of him went through the exact same thing. That is Baker Mayfield, who was a walk-on at Texas Tech and transferred over to Oklahoma after he got crossways with old Cliff, and had to sit out a year and do the scout team thing. And so I went over and talked to Baker, and Baker, of course, said that he's the best athlete that he's ever seen or played alongside, and he believes he's the Kyler's the fastest guy on their team. And he said that he was trying to be as helpful as he could with him because he knew exactly what that went through. So they kind of, so not only did apparently Kyler lean on Baker, but Baker was there to kind of offer some advice and be a little bit of a mentor to him through that season. And basically his biggest advice was you have to treat every practice like it's your game because A, if you don't, you're going to get burned out, and B, you're wasting your time, not getting better, not improving, not helping the team get better. So, little interesting sidebar there on Kyler Murray, which again, you can read about all of that on myaggienation.com. I threw that up there. The other thing that I didn't really get to get too much into because I was so running around, but he mentioned it in his time at the podium, is good old Dana was up there talking about his new offensive coordinator, who is one Jake Spavital. Former A&M OC, and he was asked that Dana isn't going to be calling plays this year. He was asked, how will that change what you do on game day and about what thoughts about that transition? And Holgerson's quote is, he's got complete confidence in Jake Spavital. I trained him for 4 years. He was my personal GA for 4 years. I trained him how to do things. He went on his own and did a lot of really good things. He knows how I think. I know how he thinks, so I've got 100% complete confidence in his ability to do this. He said, I thought it was the right time as well. He was kind of in the market for a job after when he was at Cal and the head coach let him go. So I knew he was looking. They wanted to keep him. He had plenty of options out there. He was one of the hottest, most sought-after offensive coordinators in the country last year, and we were fortunate to get him. It helps that his wife went to West Virginia. So he goes on a little bit more about Jake on that, but that was just a little brief note on that other A&M, former A&M connection.
Dana raised him from a pup. Little mini Dana. Little Jake Spavital with more hair.
How about Gundy's mullet?
Ugh.
Gundy's...
Great coach, bad haircut. Man.
He had it, like, he had product in it. He made it kind of wavy. Really? And stuff. Like, he was borderline...
I thought he cut it off, didn't he?
No,
he let it grow back out?
No, he's kept it. He was kind of borderline Kenny Powers out there.
Hey man,
if he
keeps winning, if he's winning, the press call him colorful. If he's losing, then he's just a whack job.
Yeah, so. I saw you doing a lot of live tweeting, getting some audio and stuff from that. What were your takeaways from Big 12 Media Day?
I like the setup that they have where they just kind of throw the coaches up there and it's not that long, tedious process. It seems like, anyways, that Big 12 Media or that SEC Media Days is. It seems like it's a lot more laid back in some ways. But yeah, looking at it, talked a little bit about who I think might be the real movers and shakers. Honestly, you know, Oklahoma's coming in as the favorite. I think that they are pegged to be the Big 12 champ. No matter what, the title's been going through Bedlam.
Yes, which will probably be the last game of the season, and then another rematch the week later.
And I think Oklahoma State's got a legit shot. I mean, I think they have a really good shot.
I was over there. I was on a little roundtable with the Purple Menace podcast, the TCURivals.com site.
Of course you were.
And talking about Big 12 related things. I and one other guy said Oklahoma. All the rest of the five, I think, other that were standing around there said Oklahoma State. And that the Big 12 championship game, the renewal of the Big 12 championship game will be Bedlam.
Well, you look at what Oklahoma's coming back with, obviously, with Baker Mayfield. But that two-headed monster in the backfield from last year, Joe Mixon and Samaje Perine, they're both gone. D.D. Westbrook is gone. There's a lot of missing. A lot of that firepower is missing from Oklahoma that was there last season, even though you still have your great quarterback back. But for Oklahoma State, Mason Rudolph's coming back. He's coming back with pretty much all his
James
toys
Washington
to play with.
Might be the best wide receiver in the conference this year.
So offensively, Oklahoma State's in some really good shape. Now defensively, Will they be able to keep up? You don't know. Mm-hmm. But they do have the capability to outscore folks. I mean, if they have to get in a knockdown, drag-out shootout like they did a lot last year, they have the capability to do it.
Yep. Well, Zach.
Well, Travis. Zach. Travis.
Football season is upon us.
It's so close.
It's so close.
So close.
You could taste it. We that's pretty much all the time we have for the My Aggie Nation podcast this week. Big thanks to everyone who was forced to talk to me.
And thanks everybody for making it happen.
Past week and a half because of, you know, league rules and things like that and giving me audio. So thank you to them. Sorry we were out. We were absent last week. Just a lot of traveling, a lot of media day things happening.
I was
but
here.
We will be here.
The whole time. I was here.
Yeah, I know. We'll be here every week from here on out for the rest of the year. We're coming up on our 1 year anniversary.
Oh, you get me anything special?
No.
Like a golden microphone.
We need to actually
something?
Figure out when our first
birthday.
Yeah,
we need it. We need to knock that
is.
Down.
But that's coming up pretty soon. And then football season around the corner. We'll be talking fall camp here pretty darn soon. So everyone, thanks for listening. For that man, Zach Taylor over there, I am Travis Brown. This is the My Aggie Nation podcast. We'll see you next week.
It seems like every day, everything just has a way, the way it must have seems. But if we don't watch what we're doing, our hearts will get ruined by silly things. Good love ain't needs a girl, we know that's true. If we wanna keep it, we gotta watch everything that we do, yeah, yeah. Don't wanna make sure my baby, make sure you're sticking with me.